Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 44 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer. Bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming. News and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, thanks, voice. Howdy, gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. That's voice. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games. Well, voice just told us about all that, so you know what our podcast is about at this point. And, you know, kudos to our new voiceover guy, Wayne.
Yeah, I just like voice.
We can just call him voice. The voice.
Good morning, voice.
Yep. And we're coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world. And spring is continuing to spring. And,
it's summer now. Downright muggy today.
It was muggy and a little bit of rain. It's, you know, it's getting nice. It's getting nice out there. You know, it's kind of green and lush.
Weather on.
That's right. But we're not here to talk about weather. What are we here to talk about today, Cody?
Well, in our big deal, we are proud to announce our seal of approval winner. We've combed through the entries and we have done some research and found what we believe to be a great personification of what we believe the seal of approval to be. So we have an interview with someone representing the store and you'll get to hear that later.
Nice tease.
Thank you.
All right, and in our bye tryout tonight, we're going to be taking a look at, dare I say, kind of a Euro game.
Kinda, yeah.
And that's Valdora. Mm-hmm. So we'll be taking a look at that, and we might even have a bonus review for you.
Maybe.
So, but, you know, as always, we're going to start with the Game On Inbox, which starts...
promptly. The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
Well, it is the Game On Inbox, your best source of game news, information, and all other great stuff involving games. And Cody, what do we have going on first?
All right. Well, it's time to give our normal penance, as we call it, to Myriad Games, but we're going to do you one better. Since this is a Seal of Approval episode, we wanted to bring you Dan Yerrington from Myriad Games. How you doing, Dan?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. We wanted to, without appearing too self-serving, since he is our great sponsor, we didn't want to devote a full big deal segment, but we really want to stress that it's not just a sponsor. We stand behind what Myriad Games does and how they approach the friendly professional game store model. And we wanted to have Dan give his spiel in person, I guess, and tell you a little bit about Myriad Games.
Sure. So obviously you guys are somewhat familiar with us from hearing our spots in the show for the last many months. And we are a game store here in Salem, New Hampshire, and it's very cold up here, so lots of opportunities to play games.
Is it still cold? Even in May, is it still cold?
It's it was like 30, I think, yesterday at night.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy.
It's like 80 here.
Mm-hmm. Down below frost. Well, it's nice and sunny out now, but it does get a little chilly, so... Oh. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, we're up here in New England, so it's you get the full gamut of weather, and you could have different weather in another 15 minutes. So yeah, it's as far as Myriad Games itself, we have been a business since '99. We've been here in Salem since 2003, and we carry all sorts of different board games, card games, miniatures games, tabletop games. I actually just ordered a bunch of new interior signage, and we ended up with like 35 different signs with all the different categories of games within the store. So we do try to live up to our game and have a myriad of games.
Well, and you know, one of the things, and Cody didn't mention this, but really the impetus behind our seal of approval, a lot of it I think does rest with Myriad Games in that our interactions with Myriad has been some of the best game store interactions we've ever had, and we're more than 1,000 miles away from where you are.
Absolutely.
So if you could just real briefly, could you just give us sort of your corporate philosophy and what is it that drives you to kind of set yourself apart from other game stores?
Well, the reason we call ourselves a friendly professional game store as opposed to just a friendly local game store or just a game store, your favorite game store, is that we're trying to emphasize that we want more professionalism in the industry. And that just means simple things. It doesn't mean like I'm a card-carrying game store owner and I have a degree in game storery. It just means that I... and trying to be professional in everything that I'm doing. And because we're a hobby industry, so many people open up stores for the wrong reasons or without a lot of planning. And that's why you get a lot of, I was just reading a thread online about it today, about people saying, well, where's the F in FLGS, in Friendly Local Game Store? You know, they're instead unfriendly, you know, or they're just boring or whatever.
Or it's a different word that starts with F.
Kind of raise the standard by example and saying, not saying that, you know, everything that we're doing is the best, but we're always trying to improve. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people don't see, where we're constantly revising our processes. But all that is just to provide better service to all our customers, provide the best selection we can, the best prices we can, and to provide the best presentation that we can in store, and add a lot of value to your shopping experience and really make it the best for you. So that's why we've come up with a lot of our programs to add value to that experience, beyond just, here's a box, you come in, you know, I gruffly say, oh, what are you going to want today? And then you say, oh, I want to have the gates of Loy Yang. And you say, okay, here you go.
The standoff.
Exactly. Well, and you've also provided a lot of things for folks who are remote, who aren't able to walk into your store. Cody and I are hoping that one day we will be able to physically walk into your store, and we'll probably
the pilgrimage to New Hampshire.
We'll surprise you one day, and you won't see it coming.
Well, we'd certainly be happy to have you come up here, and we have to get you your complimentary birthday party for your MVP membership, so you'll have to use that sometime.
That's right. I'm not sure if our listeners knew this, but the level of MVP membership that we have will grant us a Myriad Games birthday party. So
I'm ready to get my hat.
Yeah. And just to show you how Dan goes above and beyond, another one of the perks in the MVP membership is a certain amount of snacks and drinks that you can get. Like if you're in the store and you're playing games, you know, you're allotted a certain amount of those things every month. And he actually, in the last package that he sent us, packed in some snacks to go along with the games. I mean, it was just this amazing box full of fun. It was
a myriad of snacks.
Exactly.
If you would, see what I did
so
there.
Thanks for that, Dan.
You're welcome. That was kind of a joke on John, because Cody knew about that. And I said, well, what's John's favorite drink? Because we were joking about, like, oh, yeah, I could get these things. And there's some tricks with mailing liquids you have to do in a particular way. But hopefully everything got there all right without exploding all over your games.
Hopefully we didn't. Everything arrived fine. Hopefully it didn't cost you a whole lot extra to mail liquids. Did you have to go?
Well, that's the other trick. Is it's really heavy. But we've actually sent root beer over to Afghanistan to some of the troops. Wow. And there's all sorts of crazy paperwork you have to fill out for that. So
now, Dan, you've got the ear of all the Game On listeners. They're used to hearing John and I wax rhapsodic about all the great things at Myriad Games. What do you want them to know about?
Okay, well, let me pull up my cheat sheet here, because we're actually
the scroll.
We just did our latest listener appreciation episode of Myriad Games presentations, and we went through all our feedback from people. And so I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything. So obviously, if you're local to our area, if you're up here in New England, you can visit our store. We're open 7 days a week. We're open 10 to 8, Monday through Saturday, and noon to 6 on Sundays. And then we're online at MyriadGames.com, which is getting a makeover. One of our helpful listeners' suggestion was, they went through this whole myriad of feedback, and I like these things, and then they said, oh, and I hate your new website.
And, fantastic.
Yeah, so I had to explain to them that, yes, it's intentionally just a placeholder site, and we are in the process of upgrading the site, Cody's actually been working on some stuff for us for that, zoot it up a little bit, so we will be having that coming hopefully in the next couple of months. We've been very busy with a lot of other things here. So we're obviously on MyriadGames.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/MyriadGames. You can join our group there. We keep gaining fans every week. And then we're on Twitter, which is handy. Even if you're not in our area, you can go to twitter.com/MyriadGames. And we have all updates about when our latest Myriad Games presentations episodes come out. And more helpfully for people that are not in our area, we have like recent releases updates. So I'm looking at my latest one from last night, and it just says, like, these new games came out. Like, there's a new Warhammer Invasion Battle Pack, the new Gremlins Great Escape game, and the new Freddy vs. Jason game just came out. So that way you can kind of check in there and then go to your local game store and check for those things. Just kind of a way to keep up.
Yeah, I saw in the latest issue of the Game Trade magazine that Gremlins game. Is that made by the same people as HeroClix? It looks kind of like a Clix game.
Yeah, it's made by WizKids. It's the new incarnation of WizKids, which is owned by NECA, N-E-C-A. This is one of their many licensed properties. They have, most people know them from HeroClix, and in the past they did MechWarrior and Shadowrun and Mage Knight and all those. But they still have HeroClix, that's being made. And then the new versions, these are standalone games. So there's Gremlins, and then there's the Freddy vs. Jason games. And essentially they're like the HorrorClix games that used to be out, but they're designed as standalone, so you can theoretically, you could take those, play them with your HeroClix guys. You could have Superman fighting Freddy, that sort of thing.
Oh, awesome. Well, cool. Well, it sounds like you got a lot going on, and with the new website and everything coming out, and new baby in the family—that's exciting too. You know, so we love the well-rounded gamer. You know, we're kind of family men ourselves. So hope everything's going real well with that. And so to kind of finish out this segment with you, Dan, we want to kind of bring you a new Game On tradition. And Cody, why don't you tell them that?
Yeah, if you listen to the episode where we interviewed Andy Looney, we sprung the final five questions that must be answered for you to leave. Or I guess you could just hang up, one of the two. Are you ready, Dan Yerington?
I'm ready.
All right, he's ready. Number one, what is your favorite game?
Oh, that's tough, being a myriad gamer as I am.
There it is. Cha-ching!
Depends on who I'm playing with, but I'll just go with one of my current favorite ones is, because there's so many different ones. I really love the Lord of the Rings board game, the co-op board game by Ryan Fantasy. It was published by Hasbro and then Fantasy Flight way back. But I'd say that my current favorite is probably, Cody's going to cringe at this, but probably Thunderstone.
Swing and a miss, Dan. Swing and a miss.
Okay. Contrarily, number two, which game would you rather have die than to live free?
Oh, okay. Nice little play on words there. Let's see.
We're not too bright here, really.
After listening to the By Try or Deny segment on Mystery Express, you can go listen to our episode of Session Impressions about Mystery Express. That's been one recently that I thought was for me. And as far as, but that was a good game. Let's see, some that's really bad. Oh, man. I don't really play that many bad games because there's so many good ones to play.
You said Thunderstone, Dan.
Oh, I was playing, what was it? G.I. Joe Command Attack Battle Game.
Oh, no.
One of my top 10 games.
Oh, no. Well, I can't argue.
It is awesome and terrible because it actually has a gun that's powered by a fan, and you shoot little foam discs at little G.I. Joe stand-ups.
That sounds craptastically awesome. All right, Cody, number three.
All right, number
one
three.
One you have to play once. So.
What would you say is the single best thing about playing games? And profit cannot be an answer.
Oh, well, I don't get paid to play games. I only get paid to sell them. But I would say, and the people that you hang out with. I mean, that's what makes a game. And when you ask somebody like, what your favorite game is, what you're really asking them is, what's your favorite game experience? And that comes down to who you're playing with. You could have the best game in the world, and it would just be boring if you were just sitting there and everybody was just going, okay, I'm going to move my little meeples over here. And I like games best where you're really getting into the game and where the whole group is having a good time. And that's why it's so important to pick the right game for the right group. So it's definitely, without a doubt, the people that you play with and the experiences that you create together.
Awesome. I think we would agree with that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so number four. And this might have a different answer than number one. If you could play only one game for the rest of your life to the exclusion of all others, what would it be?
Now, are you including all expansions in this? Like, would I be able to add additional expansions to a game?
Sure, I'll grant you that one. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then to avoid the redundancy factors of getting bored with a game, I would say it would have to be something expandable. I'll go with Magic. I play a lot of Magic over the years since like 1993. So since they have new expansions coming out every 3 months, that's going to be pretty fresh if I have to play one game.
Good choice. Okay, and Cody, finally, number five.
All right. Monopoly, great board game or greatest board game?
Well, I'll give it great, but not greatest. I actually am quite a Monopoly aficionado. My family plays every holiday season, usually at Thanksgiving and or Christmas. And I have, oh man, personally, I probably have I'm down to about six different versions of Monopoly that I own, but obviously we have dozens of different ones here at the store. So every once in a while I'll see one, I'll be like, oh, I should get that. And then I remember that it's Monopoly, and I go, I don't remember.
You come to your senses. All right, well.
I mean, Monopoly's great. We were just talking about this the other day. Monopoly's great if you don't break the rules. Just don't use free parking, and you won't extend the game out to a million hours.
Preach it, Dan. Preach it. I've got a bonus question for you. Now, being in New England, are you a New England Patriots fan?
Well, I have to be. That's what I'm living.
You need to get a hold of your life.
Well,
that's
okay.
I liked him so much.
Oh, no. What do you expect him to say, really? I mean, what? There's no other sports team up there, is there?
Everyone should be a Colts fan.
Okay, well.
Only have one. Well, how about this? I'm a fan of whatever NFL team or other major sports franchise team is buying the most games from Myriad Games.
There you go.
This does not surprise me in the slightest, but that sounds good.
We'll do a poll on that. But I wanted to close out the segment with Dan with a little personal story that's just happened here in the last few days. I've been looking for the game Forbidden Island. Just came out. I called most of the dozen stores that are around the Indianapolis metro area. There's about a dozen within an hour of where I live. Most of them either had never heard of it or kind of offered to order it or referred me to Walmart or something. And I was just casually talking with Dan, and we worked out something, and he had it in the mail ordered that day. So that kind of customer service, that's something that sticks with you and that you can't beat anywhere, in my opinion. So well done, Dan.
And when I was talking to you, I think I even said like, oh, we'll just go like your local store, you know, because you said that you wanted it for this weekend. And so you said, I said, oh, we'll just go to the local store, you know, because we encourage people to just shop at their local stores. And in this case, you were trying to do that and they didn't even have it. So that's, and Forbidden Island is not an obscure game. It's by Game Right, so it's readily available.
Yeah.
So that's something that maybe we need to get those local stores to be a little more professional on. But, I was happy to be able to provide that, and we're always happy to be able to help people find new games. As Forbidden Island did just come out on Friday this past week, like Wednesday to Friday, somewhere in there. So it is relatively new, but it's an awesome game if people haven't played it yet.
Well, Dan, we thank you for joining us on the show, and we definitely want to, on behalf of our podcast, present you with our honorary seal of approval, and we definitely think that you're one of the best friendly professional game stores that we've ever encountered. So thanks for all that you do for the gaming hobby.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, we very much appreciate it, and we are always trying to get better. So any suggestions, recommendations, questions, do just send them to us through myriadgames.com, and we'll be happy to address those and see if we can continue to improve going forward.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan.
All right. Thanks, guys.
So many thanks to Dan for joining us on the show, and let's move on to games we've been playing. Cody, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a myriad of games lately.
Oh, come on, that's over.
See what I did there? Okay. Oh, okay. No, I've been playing quite a bit. A lot of kind of light stuff. I've played, I played For Sale, played a little Monopoly Deal, just got my set of Dominion Alchemy that I'm ready to break
bust
into
out,
that.
Yeah,
I played some regular Dominion, some Dominion Intrigue, which I don't bring to the table that often. Just a lot of things. You and I played Blue Moon City last
week. That's right.
Week.
We played another kind of we got Valdora coming up in the Bytrider and I, but we also that same night played Blue Moon City, which is kind of Euro-ish.
Yeah, and it was one of those where it's been like a year since I've played it, and I didn't really like it that much then. I really enjoyed it. I don't know what's happening to me.
That game might creep into my top 11 this year because I hadn't played that in a while too. But that's a really really good game, and it's got the Kinesia sort of. I don't know. I wouldn't say it's necessarily got the Kinesia theme. It's a pretty thick theme, but it's not really easy to explain. It's like you're rebuilding a city, and if you rebuild a city and there's a plastic dragon sitting next to you, then you get some special.
Then he rips off part of his skin into thank you. What?
It doesn't make any sense.
But it's a good game.
Yeah, it's a really good game. So clever card play and that kind of stuff.
And as I mentioned in the Myriad spiel there, I'm looking forward to trying out both Alchemy and Forbidden Island this weekend. Those are two things I've really been looking forward to trying in the next few weeks, so it'll be fun.
So Forbidden Island is from the designer of Pandemic, Matt Leacock.
Pandemic Light is what a lot of people are calling it.
Yeah, and they're saying that even for like younger kids and families, it's a good sort of a gateway to a game like Pandemic.
Right.
So I'll be interested to hear your review of that because
that
sounds interesting
to me.
Thank
you. And John, what have you been playing, young man?
Well, a lot of the stuff that you've been talking about there. We actually had an opportunity to play a new dice game called Escape.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Reiner. Yeah.
Another Reiner Kinesia joint here. This one has absolutely no theme whatsoever.
Oh, man.
Well, I guess the theme on the box is that it looks like a bunch of cartoon people trying to escape from like a movie theater or something that's on fire. I don't even know. And the idea basically is it's a push your luck dice game where you're just trying to get around the board from space 0 to space 20 or something like that. And you do that by rolling dice, and you have these two special dice that like one of them is missing but one of them is missing a 6 and has like a 5 and has a 7 on it. And then the other one has like an, Oh, I don't even remember what's on the dice. There are these special dice. Some of them have X's on them, and one has like a 7 on it. The point is you're rolling the dice to make a 2-digit number, where the higher digit is the tens place. And you're trying to get the highest roll that you can. And you can keep rolling as many times as you want, but if you hit double X's, then you're out. And at any point you can stop, and when you decide that you want to stop, then you can place your dice onto this track, and then the next player will go, and the track represents how many spaces you'll be able to move. But you won't be able to move them right away. You have to wait until it comes back around to your turn. And that way it kind of reminds me of like Yahtzee free-for-all. Mm-hmm. You know, how you get points in that game with those cards, but you don't actually get the points until it comes back around to your turn. Right. So as the other people that are playing, when they roll, if they roll higher than you, they can place their dice onto the track too. But if they decide to place it on a space that's lower than yours, and they have like a higher number on a space that's lower than yours, then your dice get kicked off the board. So it's this really kind of clever game where you're kind of pushing your luck, but you're also trying to kind of hedge your bets as to, you know, when to put your dice on there and, you know, when to not. You also get some bonus points if you roll doubles, but I thought it was really kind of a fun little game.
Yeah, it was cool. And, I don't know if it's worthy of, I think it retails for $30.
$30 price point, yeah. And I think that's because the playing pieces that you have are these nice wooden X's that are like your pawns mm-hmm. that you're moving around. And then the dice you get, I think it's plays up to 5 or 6, something like that. And you get these custom colored D6s. I guess that probably increases the production cost. But really nice little dice game, so I'd recommend that one.
Worth checking out, definitely.
Yeah. As far as like, well, I played a little bit of War Machine at the local game store. Hmm. And I've gotten almost all my stuff painted now, so I was able to play like a full, I think we played like a 25-point game with all painted stuff, and we've also gotten a lot of our friends involved in that game as well.
Oh, your goodness, yes.
I guess it just sort of shows the
we have every faction represented. Sometimes yeah, we've got two like or three times over,
4 or 5 people that are interested. We could like start our own league.
Yeah, we should.
And I just got Myriad Games. I just got the Protectorate of Menoth book, faction book. Oh, and it's really cool. It's got all of the stats for all the models, and then it's also got just a whole bunch of great fluff in it. It has actually a page with the entire hierarchy of the Protectorate of Menoth military.
Oh,
it's really, really cool. So
it's like a business flowchart.
It looks like that. It actually does.
Middle manager, Krios.
It totally looks like that, yeah.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. And I think that's about what
we played No Thanks.
Oh, we did. Yeah. Yeah. We've got a lot of stuff in mm-hmm. this past week. Yeah. Thorsten Gimler designed this little card game. It's
you were on it.
Yeah, this is what I do.
Wow.
And it's released by Z-Man Games, and it's just a real easy little game where basically a card is turned over, and you have to decide whether you want to take the card or whether you say,
no thanks.
Which Cody did about 100 times in the
Sorry.
Game. No thanks. And if you don't want the card, then you can put a chip on it. You have a certain number of chips in your hand. The idea being that you want the fewest number of points will win the game. And so you want to take the cards that are the lowest points. You don't want to take the cards that are the highest points. But the wrinkle is that if you happen to get 2 or more cards that are in sequence, like if you get the 23 and the 24, then only the lowest card counts. So you'd only get 23 points instead of 46 or 47. So there's some strategy in that as well, as you know, and the cards kind of remain face up, so you can figure out, you know, when you want to screw your neighbor by taking a card that you know would help them and stuff like that.
It's a fun little game.
Yeah, it's a cute one. That's about what I've been playing.
Yeah.
So, was there anything else that you've been doing?
I've also, I picked up the Penny Arcade card game, and you know what? I think it's time for a...
It's time for a Game On bonus review.
Bonus review.
Bonus review.
Bonus review.
Seems like we're having more and more of these lately.
They creep up on you.
I know.
You gotta watch out.
All right. Well, what's the bonus review for this time?
It is Penny Arcade, the card game. It is part of the Fantasy Flight Games Silver Line.
Silver Line.
You know, Citadel's Red November. I saw another one at the game store. Boy, I think it's called like Orcish Marauders or Orcish Invaders, something like that.
That would be Chaos Marauders.
Chaos Marauders. That was cool. There are orcs on the cover.
Yeah.
That one looked neat. But anyway, it's kind of that, you know, smallish box Fantasy Flight game. Run you, retails $25.
$25, yeah.
But this is based off the webcomic of the same name, Penny Arcade. If you haven't read it, it's pretty funny. It's not suitable for everyone, but penny-arcade.com, you can check that out.
It's been mostly is it mostly video games?
Yeah, it's video game related, but it also has just some general geek kind of culture in it.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. And I mentioned that because how much you enjoy or if you enjoy the webcomic, I think will kind of show a little bit in the game itself. You may or may not have as much fun with it. But anyway, it's a game for two players. It is a game of grievous personal injury for two players, and it's designed by James Hata.
Hata.
So here's what you're going to do. You have it comes with a deck for the two main characters of Penny Arcade, Gabe and Tycho. And these decks are kind of custom built for them. They have cards and pictures that are from the webcomic and kind of, you know, maybe memorable moments or things about their character. You know, for example, Gabe is the more video game oriented one. So he has, you know, more kind of video gamey things. Tycho more prefers the RPG. So, you know, he's got like Critical Strike where he's rolling a D20 on one of the cards, stuff like that. Again, if you haven't read the comic or aren't familiar with it, you may not get a lot of it. It may just seem kind of weird. And as a reader of the comic, some of this is actually pretty dated. I know that this was released as part of the Universal Fighting System game back when.
You got kind of the same rules.
Yeah, it's got kind of the same rules as that. But that, I mean, there's references in here from 3 or 4 years ago that, one of the main items, the watch, that was a thing in like 2006, I think.
Ah, okay. So, and this just came out last year, right? Yeah. This came out in 2009, mm-hmm. I think.
So here's what's going to happen. You're going to have Gabe or Tycho, and that's going to be in front of you. You'll have a card representing one of the two of them. And they have three attributes of importance. They have the life total, which once that goes down to zero, guess what happens? You have strength, which factors into how many attacks you can make on a turn. And then you have intellect, which both governs how many cards you get to draw at the beginning of your turn and how many hijinks cards you can play.
Hijinks. Like Tomfoolery. Ballyhoo.
Poppycock. Oh, I shouldn't say that. But here's how a turn will go. At the beginning of your turn, you can discard any amount of cards from your hand. Obviously, you're going to skip that on your first turn. Then you have a refresh phase. Anything that is in your spent pool, which I'll get to in just a second, is put into your discard pile, and then you draw up to a number of cards equal to your intellect. So Tycho, for example, has a higher intellect. He'll draw a few more cards than Gabe and can get an advantage there. Then you have the action phase, which is the bread and butter of your turn. You can play, there are three types of cards. There's attack cards, which play off your strength. There are hijinks cards, which play off your intellect. And then there are stuff cards, which don't really play off anything. They're just kind of, you know, kind of like artifacts and enchantments, if you're thinking in magic.
Keepers.
There you go. They give you some sort of kind of static benefit, and you can have up to two of them out at a time. Now, where the strength and intellect values come into play as far as the action phase, it's pretty interesting. Instead of having like a mana pool or some sort of resource to draw off of, let's say you have a strength of 6, to take Tycho for example, all of the different attack cards have a cost on them, usually from 1 to 3. I think there are some 4 level ones in there. You'll play that in front of you, putting it in your spent pool. And so say I have a strength of 6 and I play a value 2 attack, that means I only have 4 more attack for the rest of my turn. So it's not a kind of refreshing thing. You have a limited number of points to use, so you can kind of save it all for maybe one big attack or a couple little attacks, things like that. So you'll play an attack card, and it'll have some sort of damage on it to see if it hits or not. Now, how your opponent can block this, instead of having creatures or kind of just units on the battlefield, since it's pretty much just Gabe and Tycho trying to beat the crap out of each other, they can play cards from their hand that have block values. Now, a lot of these attack and hijinks cards, they have, you know, their cost, like I mentioned, it's in the upper left. Some of them on the upper right have what's called a block value, and this is from 1 to 3. They can play that in response to your attack, and how many, whatever the block value is, that's how many chances to see if they get a success in blocking it. How that's determined is, let's say I made that attack and John played a card with a block value of 2. He'll then take 2 cards from the top of his deck, and if any one of them have a success symbol in the, I believe it's the bottom right of the card, which looks like a, kind of like a hook 'em horns almost even, like a rock and roll sort of a thing. If all you need is 1, if you get that, then the attack is blocked and no damage is dealt.
But those cards just get discarded, though?
Right. Yeah, okay. They just get discarded. Now, any attack card you played is still in your spent pool, so it's out there. So you still spent the 2, you know, strength to do that. Okay. And so a lot of the game I found when playing it is almost this kind of cat and mouse thing of, you know, which cards do you want to attack with versus how many do you want to hold back to block? And you know, it's almost like you send out little teaser attacks to try and draw out your opponent's block cards. So you'll find a lot of that as far as, you know, kind of the ebb and flow of damage dealing. Now, the other side of the coin are the Hijinx cards. The Hijinx cards, you spend them in intellect as you would spend attack cards in strength. And these are the cards that will let you, know, draw cards or kind of fool with your opponent or have them discard things, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're played in front of you as well. Now, where it kind of gets interesting is that on your opponent's turn, your cards in your spent pool are still there. So you might have a Hijinx card that lets you cancel something your opponent played. But if you don't have enough points in your spent pool, if you didn't leave yourself enough from your turn, it's not refreshed until your next turn. So it's kind of, you have to play two turns worth as far as managing your resources.
Hmm.
You know, your strength you may want to use all at once just to make attacks, but your intellect you may want to leave for some Hijinx cards. So that was kind of an interesting element to it, where there's no mana, there's no real creatures, you know, to kind of put everything in magic terms. There's just that, and it's a little bit of, I would even say, resource management.
Yeah.
So there's this back and forth until someone ends up going down to zero life. And like I said, a lot of it is just kind of like these feints and just getting your attacks in.
Huh.
And seeing, you know, kind of what sticks.
So what was your overall impression of the game then? I haven't actually played this. You played this with your wife, is that right?
No, I played with my buddy Greg, actually.
Oh, okay.
He
came
over and played. And it's all right. Some of the references are neat, and the gameplay is kind of okay. I could see it getting really repetitive because it's just kind of this cat and mouse thing, and nothing really changes. If you're not a fan of the comic, then I don't think it really holds anything for you. The game mechanics really aren't enough to make it rise above it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's fun because I like Penny Arcade. I'm like, oh, that's neat, you know.
It's got kind of that Munchkin effect then to it, I guess.
A little bit, yeah.
Where the jokes are the real fun part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the production on it is very well done. You know, it's Fantasy Flight quality stuff, but I think the gameplay just gets really stale, and it gets stale pretty quick, I think.
This isn't a collectible card game, right?
No, it's a standalone.
Okay.
I mean, I guess there could be, you know, expansions for it if they wanted to with other characters, but...
Does this game smell of money grab? I'm just curious, because, I mean,
it's
a hot property right now, the Penny Arcade thing.
I wouldn't even go that far. I wouldn't say it's a money grab. It's just kind of a okay game. You know, it's I wouldn't pay $25 retail for it, certainly.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to get that much enjoyment out of it. And you really have to have people that enjoy the comic. I think that's such a big part of it, where, you know, if they don't get the jokes, they're going to be like, what is the deal with this? You know, it's just kind of this so-so card game. So if you're a fan of the series, check it out. If you're not, I would give this one a pass, but definitely try it before you go out and buy it, because I don't know if this is a worthy addition to your collection.
All right, so Cody, thank you for the bonus review.
My pleasure.
Do appreciate that. And we're going to move on to a little bit of voicemail that we got in the Game On voicemail box.
Uh-huh.
And one in particular that we got is in reference to our last episode, Tech Talk, where we're talking about technology at your gaming table. And Ryan wanted to tell us a little bit about something that he found out when he was at the Gamma Trade Show. So Ryan, here's Ryan.
Hello, Cody and John. This is Ryan from Utah. This is I'm just calling in response to episode 43, Tech Talk. I was able to attend the Gamma Trade Show in March. There they had a tabletop miniatures game called Exilis, E-X-I-L-L-I-S. Look it up on the Geek or check out their website. I had a chance to demo this game. I thought it was pretty interesting. I'm still the jury's still out on what I think about it, but it's a tabletop miniatures game, and you actually program. You'll have a flat screen, touch screen monitor by the table, and you'll program your units, and their battle actions will take place on the screen, but you'll be moving them physically on the board, and you'll program where your units are so the computer can keep track, and then you'll, when you battle, rather than rolling dice, that all happens through the computer. I think their big pitch was it helps with the rules because you can push little icons on the screen and it'll tell you what certain units can do, that sort of thing. Check it out. I'm interested to know what you guys think and enjoy the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
So, Ryan, thanks for that call. And Exilis?
I have no idea.
I don't even know why it's called that. We actually went to the website of Exilis.com and checked out that game system. And, it looks okay.
Looks like a fad.
I'm afraid I can't really get real excited about the concept of you've got a tabletop thing with miniatures on it, but then everything's being kind of controlled by a computer screen. It just doesn't hold any interest for me.
If you'll allow me a little bit of a crotchety rant.
Oh, go right ahead.
I just don't know when they're going to figure it out, and they being game companies, because one of the games that's showing up on tops of the year's lists already is Summoner Wars. We reviewed it a few episodes back.
Yep.
That game is essentially cards and a paper mat. It is mechanics and just, I would say it's just the mechanics that really make that game shine. Simple mechanics that are tight and that work well and that can expand. I don't see where putting minis on this, you know, this technological service that will probably be out of date in a year. You know, yeah. I just don't see where it goes from there. It's just kind of a flash in the pan. It looks really cool. I'm like, oh, that would be neat to try. I'm never going to want to own it. You know?
Well, and tabletop games, I think, just have this air of imagination about them. I mean, I know we've yammered on a whole lot about War Machine lately, but the reason is because we've enjoyed playing, and there is some fun when you're saying, I'm going to take and cast a spell, or I'm going to hit you with this. You know, the seventh grade kid that's in each of us is thinking about that and imagining what that would look like on the battlefield. And I think that if that is just on a computer screen and you're seeing that battle going on, it kind of takes away from it. It's like watching a movie rather than reading the book. There aren't too many people that would say that a movie is better than a book.
Right.
Because the book, you have the ability for that, your imagination to take over, and that's going to be way better than anything that, you know, someone else is going to come up with.
Yeah. So. I think this is a flash in the pan. I don't think we see him in a year.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes there.
But we appreciate the voicemail.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, thanks so much for calling in. And so I think that's about, we had the interview with Dan, and we did the bonus review and everything. So I think we're going to go ahead and close the Game On inbox for this one.
Sounds good.
And, you know, if you want to get a hold of us, Cody, how can they get a hold of us?
Well, the best way is by email. You can email us at the Game On inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And you can also call the Game On hotline at 4138-GAME-ON.
That's right. That's 413-842-6366.
We love getting your emails and voicemails and snail mails and whatever. Carrier pigeons.
That's right. All right. Well, I'm ready to, get on my tuxedo and go step up to the pulpit and get ready for our...
the pulpit?
The podium.
Well, let me preach to you about the Game On seal of approval.
Can you tell I'm a churchgoer? Step up to the podium for our first seal of approval presentation. You ready to do it?
Let's do it.
All right. The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. All right, this is the big deal where we are proud to announce our first Game On Seal of Approval winner. Now, if you want to listen back a few episodes back to when we introduced the concept, the Seal of Approval is...
That's episode 37, by the way.
Wow, yeah. Well done. Man, that long ago, huh?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my goodness. This is where we are looking for those friendly professional gaming stores. We put out a call to you, the listeners, to recommend what you think would best fit this seal. And this goes beyond, oh, they have great prices or the customer service is good. You know, we're looking for things that really go above and beyond and make the game store more than a place that you just show up once a week or put your money on the table. And we think we have a great winner here in Uncle's Games from the Seattle area in Washington.
That's right. And also, actually, all of Washington, the Seattle, mm-hmm. and the whole state of Washington, I guess. So yeah, Uncle's Games is our first recipient. And we, as part of this whole deal, we wanted to make sure we contacted Uncle's Games and, got in touch with them. And we wanted to just talk with them, bring them on the show to talk about the game store. So we're very pleased to have with us on the show the president of Uncle's Games, Hans Isaacson. Hans, thank you so much for coming on Game On with Cody and John.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we wanted to, as we mentioned, we are giving out our very first Game On Seal of Approval for excellence in friendly professional game stores. And, you are our first recipient. We wanted you to, if you could, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how Uncle's Games got started, how you became involved in the company, and just a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, my name's Hans Isaacson, and I'm one of the owners of Uncle's Games. There are three of us total, and two of us were actually employees of the third, and the original owner of Uncle's Games gentleman named Shannon Ahern, who started a chain of book and game stores called Book and Game Company in the late 70s. And as the market has changed and bookstores have become larger and also more internet-driven and largely less profitable, we decided to consolidate to games, where it was a solid niche as a business, but also a lot of fun and something we all loved. And so Uncle's Games came out of the ashes of Book and Game Company. And for the last 7 years, we've been growing our Uncle's stores to up to 5 locations now and a website. Our stores themselves are, we try to design them as a full-line game store, with probably the exception of the electronic type computer games, but we try to have everything from role-playing games to miniature games to chess sets. We have hundreds of jigsaw puzzles at any given time. Our whole approach to the industry is that we want to have a very large selection, but we also want to really have a good connection to our product. We make sure our employees are very well educated as to what we carry. Oftentimes they're our best customers and they become employees because they have a love for the games as well. We try to make the game stores more of a community. We run regular events and try to really support the games that we love and have something for everybody who's interested in games.
What would you say sets your store apart from other game stores? What really makes Uncle's Games shine?
Partially, we try to set a community of a game store, because we're kind of a meeting place for people who have different game interests. We have play space always available that's open for pickup games, but then we also have a pretty rigorous schedule for different events as well. I think we hire nice people and people that are generally service oriented people first. And then of that group, we always hire the game players as well. And I think that's oftentimes what you don't see in some game stores, is you get a lot of surly help in a lot of the hobby shops. And we try to have professional retail people who also love games. And I think that's one thing that also helps. Another thing that we try to do is we try to have a good number of options for any given category. So we try to have a large selection, so you have options you may not even know existed when you come into the store.
Sure. What's the gaming community like up there in Seattle? What are the kind of the more popular games? You're up near Wizards of the Coast and some other big companies.
Right. You know, I would say our top single game in terms of game system is Magic the Gathering. We do very well with Pokemon, more in Seattle than Spokane, but we do well there. And then Yu-Gi-Oh! Is also another hot commodity. Those are probably our top three. And then there's lots of, you know, we do Euro game nights at our stores where people will come in and we don't even know what game they're going to play when they come in, but it's kind of an established night for it. Oftentimes we'll let the group pick a game that just came out, we'll open it and we'll play it on the spot, and oftentimes somebody will buy it by the end of the night.
Wow, and so you do have, I guess a lot of game stores have this, but you have nightly events and things like that. Do you have any specific special events that you might want to mention?
Well, recently we just did a qualifier for the national championship for Settlers of Catan, and so through our stores we ran a large tournament structure, and the winner of that we're flying to Gen Con, and that'll be a 16-man tournament, and if they win there, then Mayfair will fly them to Germany for the World Championship.
Wow.
And so that was one of probably our best events of the year. We're always running pre-releases for Magic and all the other card games as well.
I say any flight to Indianapolis is a prize in and of itself, I think John and I would say. But that's I didn't know they had a Catan tournament like that.
Yeah, they're doing a world tournament this year where there's two people from every country can qualify. In the United States, Origins is one qualifier and Gen Con is the other. And then of course the rest of the world is also competing. And then the odd year, they'll do national championships. It'll be a North American championship next year and not a world.
Interesting.
Great. Have you ever had a chance to make it out to Gen Con? We're very proud of our home convention.
I have not. I've been to the New York Toy Show, which is another big event for us, but it's a little bit more on the industry side than the player side.
Definitely. Well, if you ever get a chance, we definitely look us up, because we're very proud of the gaming capital of the world where we live, as we call it.
Oh, yeah. I would love to go.
Well, the reason why and the way that you were able to receive this award is because we put out a call to our listeners, just asking them to write in and tell us why their local game store is deserving of our seal of approval. And we didn't want people just to say, well, they've got a good selection and they've got good prices. We really wanted the cream of the crop, something that would just really make us stand up and take notice. And of all the entries that we got for this call out for entries, this particular email really stuck out to us. And so this is from listener Philip Hoffman, and I wanted to read it to you. And Hans actually hasn't heard this ahead of time, so listener, so he's going to be hearing this for the first time. But this is what Philip had to say about your store. He says, "Hi guys, just listened to your most recent episode and I knew I had to write in. Hope I'm not too late. I'm writing about Uncle's Games in the Seattle area. There are 3 stores in Western Washington and 2 in the Spokane area. I frequent the Redmond and South Center stores. Uncle's Games is by far the best game store I've ever been to in my life. Why? They've got everything. Excellent game, toy, and puzzle selection, events, discounts, demos, very nice atmosphere, and friendly and professional employees who are passionate about games but are not annoying. The staff will help you find games and make good recommendations, but also give you space while shopping. It's obvious that they value customer service and that the employees love playing games, which is important. Not only that, but the store has the stores between them have hundreds of open demo copies of games that you can sit down and play for free. The staff are always eager to teach you a new game and will sit down and play with you if the store is not too busy. If they don't have a game, they'll order it for you and let you know when it comes in." He continues on to say that on weekends they have game nights where if you play anything in the store, you get 15% off everything you buy. Do you guys still have that going on?
We do.
Okay.
Each location does their own variation of that, but there is always something going on with that.
Okay. And he continues on and says, "They open a new game each week. That is what's made me a loyal customer more than anything else, as this is a service I cannot get anywhere else, and especially online. What a great deal. Totally worth supporting. They also host other events such as pre-release tournaments, demos, magic tournaments." He kind of goes on to talk about that, kind of as you mentioned. And he says, "I participated in a pre-release demo for Tide of Iron where I met the general manager, Mike Palmisano. We struck up a conversation and became friends. Later, when I learned FFG was doing a similar pre-release for StarCraft, I asked if I could host the event. He readily agreed and gave me a free copy of the game afterwards to say thanks." He goes on, this kind of a long email, I guess, but he says, "I tell everyone I know to shop at Uncle's and have become a loyal and devoted customer. They would be most deserving of your award, and I'm pretty sure Mike would love to talk with you on your podcast." Well, we actually talked to you instead, Hans, but be sure to tell Mike that we said hi.
I will, definitely. Thank you.
He says, "I share this last part more of a personal story connected to Uncle's Games through Mike in a very special way. Probably too much detail for your show, but it's a story worth hearing." Well, not too much detail in our opinion. We're going to go ahead and read it. Three years ago, my wife and I had a son born with Down syndrome. He's a wonderful boy, but at the time we were so confused, and I knew he would have certain limits in his life, one of those being the ability to play complex strategy games. It may sound silly, but playing games with my kids someday has always been something I've looked forward to the most. The night that I attended the Tide of Iron demo, I had a conversation with Mike about playing games with kids. I smiled and nodded, but felt sad inside, knowing that I would likely not have the experience that Mike probably did, and assumed that Mike would never understand. A week later, my wife and I returned to the store to play some games. As we entered, we saw a mom with her son with Down syndrome leaving the store. They were very cute, and we smiled at them as they left. We played a round of Hey, That's My Fish, while Mike played chess with a little girl at the table next to us. As we finished our game, the mom and son came back in and went to talk to Mike. He kissed the boy on the forehead and said, 'Take care of Mama. See you at home.' My wife and I looked at each other and said, 'No way,' we thought. I introduced her to Mike and asked if that was his family. 'Yes,' he said tentatively, and we told him about our connection, the connection with our own son, and all of our questions about the future. Mike looked at the little girl, conceded his game to her, telling her she was going to win anyway, and said, 'Excuse me, I need to talk to these people.' Then he looked at us and said, 'You guys are going to be just fine. You'll play games with your son all the time, just like I do every day, and you'll have so much joy.' Tears sprang to my eyes. He then told us about all the games that his son can play, like Who Can Yell the Longest, Hide and Seek, and even Hey, That's My Fish, and hundreds more. It truly changed my perspective on what a game is and what it means to have fun and find joy in playing them. We left the store that day feeling so cared for. It was amazing. And in fact, an answer to a deep and personal prayer I had, not even voiced aloud. And of course, we bought a copy of Hey, That's My Fish." So that's what Philip had to say about your store and about Mike. And we couldn't pass up the opportunity to recognize that.
Yeah, Mike is a really great guy. We love having him. He's in charge of our entire Seattle district, because we're in two geographic regions of the state. Seattle is the west side of the state, and then Spokane is right on the Idaho border, and that's where I work out of.
Okay. See, we've known, for those who listen to our show, we're pretty bad at history. We're not really good at geography. And so I'm glad you cleared that up for us, because I would have thought that Spokane and Seattle were 5 minutes away.
Yeah. four and a half hours and a mountain pass between.
Oh, very, very nice.
What's a mountain?
We don't know anything about mountains here. Well, anyway, Hans, thank you so much for joining us on the show. And on behalf of Game On with Cody and John, we are very proud to present you with our very first Game On seal of approval for excellence in friendly professional game stores.
It's been an honor. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we will. We are going to have kind of a poster and a certificate and whatever we can come up with that we'll definitely recognize you, your store, and hopefully you're welcome to proudly display that if you'd like.
And any listeners in the area, check out Uncle's Games, definitely, if you're in the Spokane and Seattle area.
That's right. And you guys also have an online presence, too. Is that right?
Yes, we're www.unclesgames.com.
All right. So be sure to check that out online. And again, like Cody said, if you live in the Seattle area or in the Spokane area, please go check out Uncle's Games. We give it the big thumbs up.
Absolutely. You're sampling.
And so to kind of wrap up our segment, Cody, what is our tradition here on Game On with Cody and John regarding interviews?
Well, interviewees don't get off quite so easy. We have what we call the final five, which Hans does not know anything about this. We've got five questions that we're going to hit you rapid fire, and we want to know the answers to them. You ready?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, number one, what is your favorite game?
My favorite game of all time is... oh boy, this is tough. I really love the game Diplomacy.
Oh,
because no other game has such intricate levels of strategy to it, and no other way to succeed without truly making great alliances and then stabbing those people in the back at the very last second.
Great pick.
No game has that level of treachery and strategy right in it.
Okay, yeah, definitely a good pick. Number two. What game, contrarily here, what game would you like to see thrown off of the top of the Space Needle?
I would say Chutes and Ladders, or any kid's game that has no decision-making whatsoever, games that are just roll and move, no choice. Those aren't real games, in my opinion, but, I think games need to teach.
Very good.
Outstanding.
You're passing so far. Number three, what would you say is the single best thing about playing games?
I'd have to say that the interaction you have with the other players, you really learn something about the people you're with by playing games with them. It's a whole different setting that you just don't get in a normal conversation.
I'd say especially Diplomacy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay, number four. These are getting a little more difficult here as we're heading towards five. If you could only play one game for the rest of your life to the exclusion of all others, what would it be?
Boy, I would probably say Warhammer 40,000, just because it is a hobby and a game, and so when you're not playing the game, you have other things to occupy your time with, modeling, painting, etc.
That's a very good answer. And actually, we've just recently gone into a bit of a foray into miniatures wargaming with War Machines, so that's a new thing for us too. That's cool. And now Cody has the most difficult question, number five. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Monopoly, great game or greatest game?
I'm going to have to say of those two choices, it would be a great game. There are many games that I feel may deserve that title, but Monopoly is probably the most known game in the world, outside of maybe chess, and it deserves a great status just for its longevity and reputation.
That was a very diplomatic answer, Hans.
I think someone leaked the questions. That was the best I've ever seen.
That was very good. All right, well, Hans, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All righty.
We want to remind you, the listeners, that the call is still out there. So if you think you have a friendly professional gaming store that meets our criteria for the seal of approval, either send us an email at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Or call the hotline at 4138-GAME-ON.
Absolutely, because you know we've got some other entries that are still kind of sitting in the Game On Inbox, and we're still doing research on these great game stores, but we want more. And you know, we can't promise you that we're going to do this like every other episode, you know, but you know, we definitely want to get a good cross section of these great game stores, and you know, from time to time bring you these seal of approval presentations,
right? Because stories like Uncle's Game and Myriad Games,
yeah.
You know, you just don't hear about it. You tend to hear more about the bad game store. So we want to definitely shine the light on them and keep that going. So we're now going to go into a game that you could buy at your friendly professional game store.
Oh, that was the worst segue ever.
Well, but I'm a podcaster.
You're doing a great job. Thanks, so yeah, we're going to be talking about Valdora and our Buy, Try, or Deny. Let's do it.
Buy, Try, or Deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. All right, as I mentioned in my very awkward segue, we are going to delve into Valdora. Have you ever been to Valdora?
No.
It's beautiful this time of year.
Lovely. Well, we're going to be talking about that today, then. It is a lovely board.
Thank you.
So Valdora is a game for 3 to 5 players, ages 10 and up. It is designed by Michael Schacht, who you might know from games like the Spiel des Jahres winner Zuloretto and many others. It is from Abacus Spiele and I believe distributed in the United States by Rio Grande Games. So here's kind of the idea, what they call the game idea in the rules here of Valdora. Hidden far away from our time lies a valley full of unimaginable riches. Adventurers from all over the world set off to try to make their fortune here. Players purchase equipment and commissions in Valdora cities. Only with the help of special equipment can they dig for gold and various gemstones. If a player undertakes a commission and delivers the requested gemstones to the house of the patron, he receives victory points. Additionally, he can hire a craftsman. Each craftsman specializes in gold, silver, or specific gemstones. The first player to have enough craftsmen with the same specialization may open a workshop. Workshop owners receive bonus points. At the end of the game, players receive victory points for their workshops, craftsmen, and gemstones. The player with the most points has made his fortune in Valdora. Exciting, eh?
I think so.
So, you know, that's sort of the theme of the game here is that you're trying... It's a pick-up-and-deliver game, if you could put it in a category, where you're trying to fulfill these commissions by going and picking up these gemstones. And, you know, eventually at the end of the game, you're going to get points for the commissions that you've completed. And also, you'll get some bonus points based upon the kind of commissions you've completed, which are going to be based upon these craftsmen and workshops and stuff like that. So... one thing to mention just from the top here is that this game has beautiful components. It has really a really pretty board that sort of shows the area of Valdora with these five different cities. And there's like a little harbor area and, you know, little pathways. And it's just very, very pretty to look at.
It's got the Ubongo gems.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so since we're dealing with gems here, it's got the same kind of little gems that are in Ubongo and Niagara, games like that. And so when you set up the game... all these little spaces that are along paths on the board are going to have 6 gems in them. And you get a bag and you mix them up and randomly put them there. And then in each of the cities, you're going to have these very interesting wooden books. And it's almost like there's stands for these cards. The pages of the book are a deck of cards.
This was really well done. Yeah, this is sharp.
The way that they sit in these little wooden containers, you know, it looks like an open book, and then as you turn the pages or move the cards over from one side to the other, it looks like you're turning pages in a book. So very, very interesting components there. You will get like a wooden pawn to mark your pieces, and then there's some cards involved in the game. Oh, you also get some silver coins, little plastic coins, which represent your coins in the game. So on your turn, well, you're going to start off in the beginning of the game with all of your pawns in the center city. And what you're going to be doing is going around the board, collecting equipment, and the equipment will allow you to carry gemstones, and you're going to be collecting gemstones. You'll also be going and collecting commissions, which are sort of like, you know, jobs that you need to fulfill, and you need to go and collect certain things and then deliver them to a certain location, and then you'll get points for that. And so that's what you're going to be basically doing on your turn. So the turn is sort of divided up in a few different segments. The first thing is you're going to going to move. And in this game, the movement's very interesting because you can move any number of spaces that you want. But if you get to a city, then you have to stop. And so that, you know, you think there's a lot of flexibility with that movement, but it does sort of limit you if there's certain houses or locations you need to go to. You know, you might get stuck in a city for one turn. So you're going to move. If you land on a space that has another opponent in it, then you have to pay that opponent one silver coin. And you're going to start off with just one coin at the beginning of the game. If there's more than one opponent there, then you have to pay each of them one coin. So that's one kind of a downside there. After you move, then you'll be able to carry out one of five different actions. So the first thing that you can do is, if you're in a city, you can purchase equipment or commissions. So like I said, the equipment and commission cards are in these decks that are on these little stands that look like books. And two of the cities have commission cards and two have equipment cards. And so you can kind of look through the book and decide you know, what you want to buy. So you can only ever buy the thing that's on, that's things that are visible, that are on the top pages of the books. If you want to turn a page, it's free for the first turn, but then every page turn that you want to do after that costs you one silver coin. And so you can kind of flip through the books as you want to, and then if you want to choose to purchase one at that point, you can do that as well. Commissions cost one silver coin, and equipment cards cost one gold. And commissions, you can only have three incomplete commissions at any one time, but you can have as many pieces of equipment as you want. And what the equipments are going to allow you to do is to carry gemstones. When you start the game out, you only get one equipment card, and it has like a gold pan on it. So it's for carrying, you know, surprise, surprise, gold. And so you're able to carry that one gold. But then once you buy more equipment, the equipment itself will say, you know, what you're able to carry. It'll have like a picture of a backpack, and it'll say like maybe a blue gem, and that'll be able to carry one blue gem. So you want to get as many of those as you can so that you can collect these things to try to complete your commissions. The commission cards are going to have a picture of a scroll on them, and they'll have certain gems. It might be just as few as one gem of a particular color, or there might be multiple gems. And then it's also going to tell you the location that you need to take those gems to complete the commission. And there's icons on the board for these different houses to show where you need to take these certain things, these patrons' houses. So, getting those commissions and equipment is one of the actions that you can do. Another thing that you can do, if you're on a path space on the board where the gems are, you can load gemstones. Like I said, you need these equipment cards to be able to load the gemstones, but if you get to a place with multiple gemstones that you can load onto your equipment cards, you can load as many as you're able to. So that's loading gemstones. You can complete commissions. If you happen to be end your space at end your turn at a location where you're, you know, dropping off these gems to complete your commissions, then you can do that. When you turn in the stones for the commissions, then you're going to take them off of your equipment cards. And there's a little area in the middle of the board that looks like a big green field. That's kind of your discard spot for these gemstones. You just kind of put them in there. And then you'll basically take that card and slide it underneath your player card that you get at the beginning of the game. And that you'll basically bank those points. Now, once you complete a commission, then you're also going to earn a craftsman. Now, what also comes with the game is this little seven-sided cardboard thing that is sort of like a wheel, almost like a seven-sided wheel. And next to the sides of this wheel, you're going to place these stacks of craftsman tokens. And there are different numbers of tokens for different colors, seven total colors. And whenever you complete a particular color's commission, you're going to get a craftsman of that color. So if you complete a blue commission, you go to the blue house and turn in your stuff, then you're going to get the victory points for that, and then you'll get a blue craftsman, which you'll set down right in front of you. If the stack of blue craftsmen, for example, is empty, then you travel, you know, one space clockwise, and then you'll take one of that color. So that's a pseudo-strategic thing. Now, why do you want to get these craftsmen?
Why do you want to get these craftsmen?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Cody. If you get a certain number of these craftsmen, you're able to purchase a workshop, which are these large square cardboard tokens that you can put in front of you. For example, for the blue, using blue as an example, if you get two blue craftsmen, then you can build a blue workshop. So once you get that second craftsman, you can then claim the blue workshop, provided that no one else has claimed it. What is that going to do for you?
What is that going to do for you? Sorry, I was a little late.
Again, I'm glad you asked. The workshops may earn you victory points at the end of the game. They might have a value of victory points. But even if they don't, you're also, if you happen to get a blue workshop, for example, from then on, every blue commission that you complete, you're going to earn some additional bonus victory points. And those are in the form of these bonus tiles that come with the game as well that are each worth 10 points. So let's say you've completed two blue commissions. You get those two blue craftsmen, and then you get that blue workshop. Well, then you go off and you get another blue commission, and you go back to the blue house to finish that one up. Now you're going to get another blue craftsman, which won't gain you a whole lot there, but because you already have the workshop. But you're also going to get a 10-point bonus token for completing another blue one. So you can sort of focus your strategy if you want to on one particular color and try to continue to get a workshop and complete more and more commissions of that particular color. And then that'll give you more and more points, you know, 10 points every time after that. So, completing commissions is another thing that you can do on your turn. The fourth thing that you can do on your turn is to replenish your silver. You only start off the game with one silver coin, but if you go to one of the silver mine spaces, you can increase your total of silver and replenish your silver up to 6 coins. And you can only ever have 6 coins maximum in the game. If you ever end up with more than that, you have to discard down to 6. So remember, those silver coins are how you're able to pay for your commissions. And then the last thing that you can do is to take provisions. So provisions are an interesting way to modify how you move in the game. You start off the game with no provisions, and your little player card basically shows your little guy, just generic hero guy, sitting in front of a table with crumbs in front of it. If you flip that card over, he's sitting in front of a table with a big loaf of bread and like food in front of him, his provisions. If you land in a city, you can take as your action, rather than completing rather than buying commissions and equipment, you can choose to take provisions. And if you do that, you'll turn your card over so that you got the food in front of you. And then on a later turn, you can use those provisions to be able to move through a city without stopping. And this can be very, very important. When I first read the rules to this game, I didn't think that was going to be important at all. But being able to find a good time to pick up those provisions so that you can move quicker is very, very important in the game. So those are the 5 things that you can do. It's pretty easy. You can purchase equipment or commissions, load gemstones, complete commissions, replenish silver, or take provisions. So you'll just continue on, and as you're completing these commissions, you're gaining those points, gaining the craftsmen, and possibly those workshops. And everybody sort of continues on their own little strategic pathway until you get to the end condition of the game, which is when you only have one color worth of craftsmen left. And once there's only one stack left, then the game, you basically continue the game until everyone's taken an equal number of turns, and then you'll score. And the way that the point score in this game are as follows. You're going to get 10, you're going to basically get the points that are on your commission card. So you'll add up all of those, of all the commissions that you've completed. Also, you're going to get 10 points for every distinct color of craftsman that you've claimed. So I told you about maybe taking the single color strategy and just going for, I'm only going to do blue, and that way I'll get all those bonus tokens. That's a perfectly legitimate strategy, but if you happen to get 5 different colors of craftsmen, then that's going to be worth 50 points, because you'll get 10 points for each unique color. So you can get a maximum of 70 points for just doing that. You're also going to get any points that are on your workshop cards. If you have workshops, that'll gain you points. Any gems that you still have on your equipment cards are each worth 1 point. And I think that might be all of the ways that you get points. you'll add up all your scores, and whoever has the most points is the winner. If there's a tie, then whoever has the most silver coins is going to be the winner. And much like a lot of these European games, if there's still a tie, then they share in the victory.
Boo.
So that is the basics of Valdora, and it's a very quick game. It plays in about 45 to 60 minutes. I think it took us a little longer than an hour just because we were kind of shooting the breeze, and in a way, that's kind of a positive part of the game, is the fact that it's not real heavy and brain burning. And well, we can get into that in our buy, try, or deny points. So as Cody, why don't you explain to our listeners kind of how we do our game reviews in buy, try, or deny?
Yeah, instead of giving you kind of a concrete buy, try, or deny, as we did in earlier episodes, John and I are going to break down the game into what we consider buy points, which are parts of the game we really like and we think, you know, are really strong points that every, well, we say most people will get behind. Our try points are kind of those where you may want to feel it out a little bit. It's parts of the game where some people may like it, some people may not. It's a little more polarizing than the normal points. And then deny points are game are points we just think the game fails at and just are negative marks on its record, so to speak.
So given that, Cody, why don't you give me your buy points for Valdora?
Well, before I get into that, I play every game with an open mind. I'll try any game once. Really, I'll try any game twice. I was prepared to hate this game. Just looking at like the box art and kind of giving a once-over on the rules, I was ready to hate this game. And
because it's Euro. I mean, you can't deny that this is a Euro game.
But I loved it. I mean, And some of the reasons why, the quick turns, it's like you'll never have a really long turn. You know, it's pretty much you have one of, what, five options,
yeah,
you know, to do, and you do that. And yeah, there's longer overarching strategies, but an individual turn is pretty short. And the game as a whole is very short, you know, surprisingly short, I would say. Where I think it really succeeds is you'll get kind of the people like me who are maybe more Ameritrash people and don't like the really heavy Euros. But this game also has enough depth to it with the craftsman and kind of that scoring mechanic and plotting out a few turns ahead that I think even the heavy Euro people will find a lot here to deal with. And you have, you know, the components are nice, the art is beautiful. This really marries the kind of Ameritrash and Euro crowds almost to a Kingsburg level, where I think it just kind of bridges that gap, and I can't say enough good things about it.
Wow! So I mean, there's a bunch of buy points yeah. right there. Yeah, I mean, for me, one particular thing is the components. You know, this is a game that I purchased, and I'm just these days I'm not buying games that don't have pretty components, because that's a lot of what sort of catches my eye is that high quality. The books, the little mechanic of the books and the turning of the pages was really, really interesting and different. And I also like that for being a Euro game, it actually has a little bit of kind of indirect confrontation. And we experienced this in our game where I could tell that Cody had been eyeing a particular commission for a couple of turns, but he was waiting to try to, you know, get over there and to be able to claim it. And so I went into that city and spent like four coins to turn pages and sure. basically just covered up that commission so he wasn't able to get it. So in order, he had to spend another turn going and getting more money so he could come back and turn all the pages back to be able to get the one that he wanted. So that was kind of a fun Ameritrashy sort of, you know, confrontation in the game that I thought was really cool.
That and landing on the same spot as someone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's one of those, you kind of dismiss the provisions. I dismiss that part of it. It's like, oh, if you land on the same space, you have to pay me a coin. Yeah, big whoop, that'll never happen. Man, that was the bane of my existence. I had to stop several times to get more coins to prepare myself for that.
And you were trying to complete commissions a couple of times, right? And someone was in mm-hmm. that patron's yeah. house, and you didn't have the money to pay him, so you couldn't go in there and yep. complete that commission. So those little intricacies, I think, make it a lot of fun. I think one of the best parts about the game is the fact that it really, I think, is a great gateway game for new gamers, because it, like Ticket to Ride, which is a kind of an archetypal gateway game, the turn is very simple. You know, I mean, even though you have five things to do, they're really easy things, and they're very dependent on where you are. So if you're in the silver mine, that's all you can do is take coins,
right?
And you know, so there's never a question of what 15 things do I need to do on this turn. So that makes the game go very quickly. Move, do your thing, do your action, and you're done. You know, move, do your action, and by the time, I mean, there were the people we were playing. We played with Kaylin, with Cody's wife and his sister-in-law Kathy, and about five or six times during the game, I was just sitting there going, "Whose turn is it?" And they all looked at me and go, "It's yours, John," because it comes around so quickly. And I was just, you know, jabbering on. But I think that's one of the other big positives of the game mm-hmm. is just how quickly it goes. It's a good gateway game. So what about try points?
The only try point I can think of, and this will matter for some people and won't matter for some people, is that I don't know how well it scales. You know, it's meant for 3 to 5 players, and that's correct, right?
That's right, yeah.
And I think it works there, but...
We played with four.
We played with four, and that was, I think, the sweet spot.
Yep.
I think 5 would get crowded. I think 3 would be a little too... abandoned. Mm-hmm. This is a game where I wish they either had like a two-player board or they had a two-player variant with the main game, because I think this would be really fun there. And like I said, some people won't care. You know, they may have a slew of two-player games, but you know, with Kayla and I especially, I really like to have a good stable of two-player games. So the fact it didn't have that, it's a personal nitpicky point, but there's going to be people out there that don't care about it. So that's all I've got.
Yeah, I would actually agree with you. That was going to be one of my points too, is if they had a two-player variant built into the rules, you know, like any game that doesn't support two, you go on Board Game Geek, someone has come up with some two-player, right, you know, balancing mechanism. But, it, you know, that would have been great if this was a pure 2-to-5-player game. I think that would have made it a little bit better. I also think that if it might come across as being a little too repetitive, maybe, because you are just kind of doing the same thing. But Ticket to Ride, I think, would be too, because you only have like three things that you're able, right, to do. That doesn't make it any less fun. So some people might not like that, but I didn't have any problem with it. I actually liked the fact that it moved kind of quickly. And I
think there's enough different things going on and different long-term plans that, you know, any game will be repetitive.
Yeah,
really. So
yeah. So what about any deny points for this game?
I have no deny points for this game.
I also have no deny points for this game. I think this is a very, very good game, and it was way better than I thought it would be. I kind of picked it up on another podcaster's recommendation, and was not disappointed at all. I think it's a really good one. I think if you're looking for a light Euro, that's might be a good gateway game for non-gamers, that to introduce them to this sort of abstracty Euro with theme thrown on top of it game, I think this is a good one.
Yep, to me it's not only Jones Theory compliant, I think it's going to find its way in the Jones collection very shortly.
Okay, don't steal it from me. All right, so that's Valdora. All right, well, you ready to close out the show?
Let's do it.
All right. You got to show. Drop that gem. Drop that gem. Baby, if you want to be mine, you got to show. Drop that gem. Yes, yes. Tell me more. I'm a sequin fountain.
All right. Well, that is another fine episode. Well, we consider it fine.
Yes.
Of Game On with Cody and John.
At least it's over.
That may be a good or bad thing, depending on you, the listener. We'd like to thank you for listening. As always, you'll hear all the myriad ways to contact us.
My gosh.
That's all. Here at the end of the show, we do want to mention our donation button on our website. You can click there, and 100% of the proceeds that we receive from you go right back to the show that help us maintain our website, podcast hosting fees, all sorts of stuff. But everything's going back to you and helps us put out a quality product.
Absolutely. And one other thing to mention that's not necessarily on our show is back in Gen Con, back in August, I actually did a podcasting panel with Russ Wakeland from the D6 Generation, mm-hmm, on setting up the studio, which is about microphones and soundboards and all that kind of techie podcasting stuff. If that interests you at all, I invite you to check out on pulpgamer.com. That's on the feed there. They've got that posted there, and Don Dem did a good job of getting that all edited up for us, and I think it's some good information, and so if you want to check it out, go check it out.
Excellent. It goes over my head, but I'm sure it is quality information.
All right, so what do we got going on for the big deal for this next episode?
Well, you mentioned conventions, and we are going to give you our convention guide for 2010 with Origins and Gen Con coming up. It is the season.
Yay!
So we're going to, we've talked about kind of conventions in the past, but we want to make this an annual thing, give you up-to-date information, and get you ready for convention season.
That's right. And since we played a kind of a nice light Euro-style game for this episode, for next episode's By Triad and I, we're going to swing the complete opposite direction
and go for a
long, long Euro game and check out Through the Ages, A Story of Civilization. So look for a big full review of that, and we'll see what Cody thinks about that.
We'll see if I survive it.
Yeah. But so join us in 2 weeks. We've got another great episode of Game On. And hey, until then,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.